Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Thanks for those people who have chosen to follow us so far. We can be found at iTunes by searching for the Back of the Class, and we can be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com.
We could probably thank those followers by name.
You don't even want to know. We could, probably. If they would ever let us know who they are. Quick rundown of the structure of our show. Each week, one of us brings an educational resource into the discussion. We'll spend about 20 minutes discussing it, and then we'll have a spitballing session where the two people who didn't bring it in... I'm hearing myself.
That's never a pleasant thought, hearing you... I don't need to hear you twice.
Simon, you got me on your computer? All right, I'm not hearing myself anymore. So the structure of the show is we have 20 minutes of discussion and then a spitballing session. My name is Patrick O'Shea. I'm an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. Joining me today, as always, are Simon Richmond, a technology associate at EDC, and Daniel Curry Corcoran, a homeless guy.
I take a call from a different city each week.
Last week, we discussed the YouTube clip from the RSA Animate called The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. The clip's is interesting for a couple of different reasons, but it led us into a discussion about how schools are, and more importantly, are not set up to motivate students and teachers. They don't necessarily reward the right things and don't necessarily provide the types of things that are important. Well, during that show, Danny brought up an article that he wanted us to talk about today.
He was Daniel.
Sorry. Daniel, the homeless guy.
No problem.
He was kind enough to provide us that article 15 minutes ago. Anyway, I'll let Daniel,
it's my professional name.
I'll let Daniel introduce the topic for this week. Go ahead, Daniel.
All right, thank you. I wanted to continue our discussion from with you kind of leading the show. It often doesn't tie in well with other weeks, so I thought I would play a little chairperson role here, see if I could wrap up some of the consultation we've had. 2 weeks ago, you guys gave me a lot of crap for bringing up the concept of love, and that if we just create nurturing, loving environments for kids, they'll do better. So, I thought last week we had a really good discussion. I liked that video quite a bit, and it really talked about the whole idea of rewarding people and when you reward them to do other than kind of menial tasks. Menial is probably not the right word, but when you want them to do a lot of critical thinking, you often get poor results by just giving them a monetary reward. So I wanted to, I heard a great story on the liberal-leaning NPR a few days ago driving home, and it was really talking about this research that had just been put out, I believe it was, help me out, what university did this? Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And I wanted to highlight a few tasks, and it was not 15 minutes ago. It was sent last night.
That was not sent last night. Maybe an alternative universe, Daniel.
All right. So one of the things that this really talks about, and the title of it is, you can get out there and Google it. There's a lot of information. It's called Smarter Teens Are More Sensitive, Have More Women, which I thought was kind of interesting. There's lots of really the focus of the article is looking at this whole concept of group intelligence. And one of the things it says is that you can't just put a bunch of experts in the room and get the group to actually do a better job. And that's one of the things I think I was critical of last week. I think in education, we sometimes do have an expert complex where an expert is out there giving their opinion and everybody is writing that information down. But is that making us smarter? Is that making us create this 21st century education model for the future? So wanted to just highlight a couple of the bullets. So it starts off by saying that surprisingly in a team, an individual's smarts has little to do with sex. Little to do with success. In thought, thought-based tasks such as visual puzzles and negotiating other scarce resources. So I thought that was interesting. Individual smarts has little to do with kind of these thought-based tasks, and I thought that tied in last week with the whole idea of the critical thinking and whatnot. It says it's not as important to consider what an individual can do by themselves, but what we can do collectively. So again, my thinking there was that, you know, right now we're trying to prepare students for a world in the next 20, 30 years that is changing incredibly. We're not really sure what jobs are going to be out there for kids in 30 or 40 years. So again, the idea that we need to work better together, this global interconnected community. So again, wanted to get your thoughts on that. Went down to say just a little bit more about intelligence among groups of people who cooperate well, showing that such intelligence extends beyond our cognitive abilities of the group's individual members, and that the tendency to cooperate effectively is linked to the number of women in the group. So I thought that was, since we have three boys talking today, this idea of women creating are better at creating this type, better type of atmosphere.
Have we ever actually had a woman on the show?
No.
What is a woman?
Well, we have Simon. That's the next best thing.
Says the homeless
guy. Given our earlier discussion that we don't need to share with everybody.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Says the homeless guy.
Yeah, says the homeless guy. So what they talked about here, and this gets back to my comment on love, is the idea that teams containing more women demonstrated greater social sensitivity and, in turn, greater collective intelligence. So I know that, you know, now we have a lot of talk in our schools about getting kids to work in groups, and we've all had these experiences when we were in school working in groups. You know, it usually became the one or two people doing all the work, which would be me, and then, you know, somebody copying answers or people not living up to their side of it. So that's really what it went on. It says the study also gives the first solid measure of collective intelligence. They dubbed it the C factor by researchers and defined as a group's ability to perform a wide variety of tasks. And again, ties into our talk last week. So I thought we would get that, continue that discussion that we had last week of how we motivate, how we get people. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, we're not in the best economy around the nation, so a lot of teachers aren't getting raises. So what are some other ways to inspire them to want to come to work and do a good job? And Patrick had pointed out the idea of, you know, giving people 24 hours to do whatever they want. But here it kind of expands upon that to give people, not only people 24 hours, but to put them in an environment where they can share, they can create together, and not dominated by individuals. So really, that's what I wanted to share. You know, I'm sure you guys are both scholarly. You read it in 15 minutes, even though older than 15 minutes. But I wanted to get your input on that. What do you think? So go ahead and...
Simon, how about you go ahead first?
Well, I thought that this was, it was an interesting article and had a lot of very worthy things to say, particularly about how groups interact with each other. I certainly found that this has largely been true in my experience. In group work that I've done as a participant or that I've overseen, you get very different results from different groups, and surprising results, because it's much more important how the group works together than who the people are in the group. And I think you often have this trade-off. Maybe this is a stereotype, but you get a really intelligent person, a kind of an egghead person, and they lose touch with their social skills, and they're so focused on what their intelligence is able to bring to the table that they're unable to listen to others and consider alternative opinions.
But enough about Danny.
Now, any teacher who designs good group work knows that it's not enough to just give a task to the students and put them in groups and expect them to do it jointly. You have to give individual kids in each group roles to fill so that everybody's involved. You need to teach kids how to work in groups. And they didn't really go into that in this article, but they did kind of note almost accidentally that the groups who worked best happened to be the ones with women, and then they kind of deduced that was because of the social skills. I thought that was very insightful, but it also begs the question, what can we do to make groups work better when there aren't women around, or make men more like women, or make women more womanly? I mean, what they're really talking about here is being able to have a level of emotional intelligence and be aware of other people's viewpoints and elicit their participation in a discussion. Now, you don't have to be a woman to do that, but what is it that a teacher can do to teach skills like that to a whole group of kids? Because if you can figure that out, then you'll be able to use these skills in your classroom and get kids working together in more constructive ways.
Okay, interesting. See, I had some pretty big issues with this article. And unfortunately, many of them, I think, stemmed from the fact that it was just horribly written. And I hate to say that because I'm very much normally a guy who's more about the message than the form of the message.
But yeah, but since it's my article, you're going to pick apart the grammar.
No. I'm just saying that, you know, anybody who read that article would... I had a tough time reading through that article, and it was pretty poorly written. I'm not saying that to pick on you, Daniel. I'm just saying that at times that got in the way of my understanding of whether the weakness that I was seeing was the author's inability to convey the strength of the work, or whether there were weaknesses in the work themselves. Mm-hmm. For example,
your methodology.
No. It's not that at all.
I'm just giving you crap.
I know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Because I'm not Mr. Methodology at all.
Oh, no, you're not.
But for example, one of the things that it that it said or talked about, excuse me, was that they were also not only asking the participants to conduct knowledge skills and cognitive skills, but they also talked about the ability to make moral judgments as well. But they never mentioned that again. So I didn't know whether that was just a weakness of the journal or the weakness of the author. And other things that were kind of thrown in almost as one-off statements that I didn't quite know what to make of them. For example, very late in the article, there's a statement in there that says they're talking about the group dynamics, and they says not only was individual intelligence irrelevant, but group cohesion mattered little, which is an interesting idea. That's a very interesting idea, because oftentimes if we talk about the idea that, you know, women talk more and they're collaborating more and they're more socially sensitive, I would think that would improve group cohesion. But it does. That sentence was just kind of thrown out there. So
it seems to contradict what they're saying in the rest of the article.
It seems to. And this is why I'm saying that, you know, I don't know how much of this is a weakness of the research. Or
I'm sure you're going to get to the overall message soon. I'm sure.
No, the overall message of this is that I have a very difficult time drawing conclusions about this and the generalizability of this in educational settings based on this one article that I had 5 minutes to read.
I thought it added some credence to kind of the what we had discussed yesterday, and really reflecting on the side of the education is that, you know, we just can't reward teachers with money. Not going to really get us to do the work we need to really get done, and getting kids to think differently or critical thinking or some of these 21st century skills. I just thought it really added, you know, and got thinking more about, you know, how do teachers really work in school buildings? I mean, I think still a lot of it, we still come out of a system where everything is very individual, classroom-based. And the idea of getting people in groups, we see it a lot in the accountability world, at least, when we're trying to build these data teams, right? And that's the last thing you want to do is go into school and say, you're going to be on a data team because, you know, that creates new teams for teachers, more meetings. But what we've really tried to do is kind of internalize the work of having data discussions as part of your just instructional work. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of when we've getting people around the table and when you can begin to talk freely and share ideas, no matter if you're that first-year teacher that nobody really has any, you know, gives a lot of credibility to if you're a first-year teacher, or whether you're the veteran of 30, you know, you're kind of the ornery person that's, you know, not wanting to change. But once people begin to freely share ideas, that adds a lot of ability to actually look at students differently and look at our jobs differently. So really that's what I was kind of getting at.
Listen, you know, I don't want to misconvey the fact that this is an exciting possibility. You know, the idea that we can set up groups and start understanding the dynamics that make group, group successful is an important step in education, because it's one of the things I've always been frustrated about, both as a student and as a teacher. Group work just never seems to work the way I would like it to, or those kinds of things. In many cases, I've seen that it adds a layer of complexity that it doesn't, that the benefits don't overcome. So the idea that we can get to the point where we understand how works, how groups work, and what makes them successful is very exciting. You know, I don't want to, you know, say that we've got it solved based on this work, but I think that this is a very, very powerful first step. I like the idea, especially since one of the most exciting things about this article for me was the idea that they're thinking about it in terms of predicting future success, not just, you know, creating the optimal group, but they can look at a group that's already in place and predict how well they'll be able to do future tasks together. If they're right about being able to do that, then that holds a lot of potential for setting up groups early on in a classroom setting, and then knowing how successful they'll be over time. I think that's great. I think it's fantastic.
Let me say something here about Canadians.
Oh, goodness.
Comedians?
Canadian, but you
Canadian.
Know,
that
reminds me.
There's no difference.
When I first read this title, I misread it. I thought it said smarter teens are more sensitive and have more women. And I was like, what? The nerds are getting the chicks now? Is that the article Danny is sending out?
I was like, I'm 15 years too late.
I was sensitive back before it was cool.
No, but as a Canadian, I just want to give you a quick anecdote about my experience when I moved to grad school in the U.S. Canadians are a meek and gentle people.
We learned that in the Olympics.
Yes.
No, I'm not talking about the hockey fans. That's a subset. They'll grow up and they'll become real Canadians one day. And with being Canadian is a sense of humility and kind of quiet social observation. Now, when I moved to the U.S. as a grad student and I started taking classes and being marked on class participation, I found it very difficult to break into the discussion because all my American classmates wouldn't stop talking. And you're not allowed to interrupt people in Canada. And what you say after person A speaks has to relate to what person A said. Neither of those two rules really seem to apply in the American graduate school classroom, at least the school I was in. People just said whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, and it didn't have to relate to anything else that was going on around them.
So how long did it take you for you to learn that and just start spouting off?
You interrupted me all the time, so I mean, when did this...
Becoming friends with you two helped a lot in the transition.
But we've seen that... No, I'm sorry, go ahead, Sam.
I want to relate this back to group work. That's a specific ability that you need to have in a group, is to be able to relate what you're thinking to what other people are thinking, to be able to give them opportunities to speak. And if you can begin to gain insights into how to make that work in a classroom and teach kids how to do it, then you're going to have a much bigger impact on how those kids are able to work in what people are now calling an increasingly flat world in the global economy. Because the jobs that kids are going to have when they graduate from school are going to be multicultural. They're going to be working with people from other countries. And if you're not able to interact with them sensitively, and a lot of these skills are being highlighted in this article, then you're going to be at a disadvantage in the workplace. So I think teachers should be not only teaching these skills to improve the group work in their classrooms, but it's part of preparing kids to work in the future workforce.
See, this is an interesting... I think that it's interesting, not really because of what Simon said.
Simon says.
Yes, I'm just following him up, and I'm going to make my own point, right? I don't have to align my thoughts with yours at all, right, Simon?
That's very alpha male, yes.
No, I think it's actually very interesting because what it seems like, and you can correct me if you'd like, and I'm sure you will, unless you're too meek and timid as a Canadian to do so. What it seems like you're trying to say is, and something I would agree with, is the idea that we need to start teaching certain skills, not necessarily focusing all of our time on teaching content as
absolutely. You know,
math and those kinds of things. But if we can start teaching these kinds of collaborative skills, the question I have is how much of this is not even going to be necessary anymore because of all of the collaborative tools that kids have and are growing up with, that they'll come into the setting with those collaborative skills. And we won't necessarily have to teach them. We'll just have to recognize them and leverage them, something we're not prepared to do right now.
Well, this, I mean, I think it gets a little deeper than that. I mean, and this
absolutely,
is
I'm sure it does.
Blow
I'm very
your
shallow.
Mind type question.
I'm very
But,
shallow.
You know, I think it really, you know, I have two daughters. I know Simon's also man enough to raise two women. But, you know, one of the things I think girls
My daughter
have
is
a much
worth two.
Daughter? No. No daughter is worth two. Let me get that straight real quick.
Okay.
One of the things I think is I think my daughter has such an easy time, and I think she has so much of a different world experience than I see many of the boys in her group. You know, for instance, because I think even my brothers, they have boys, and there's always this idea around Halloween. It's always the fun thing that they want to dress up, and you know, as a girl, I don't really care what she can be Dora or she can be. You know, dress up as a wizard, it really doesn't matter. But, you know, there's lots of fathers who always have a problem with their sons dressing up as blue because blue's a girl, or Dora because she's a
blue's
girl.
A girl?
Blue's
not a girl.
Girl.
Yeah, dude.
You know, Blue's Clues is a
blue's
girl.
Blue's not a girl.
I had no clue.
Blue is a girl.
I knew Bambi was a boy, but I didn't know Blue was a girl.
Blue's a girl. So anyway, so, I mean, I think
boy.
We have...
Bambi was totally a boy in that movie.
Bambi's not
Hello.
A boy. How can you be named Bambi if you're a boy?
That's Bambi's critical, this is a central problem. But, I mean,
right.
I think these
anyway,
are the values.
Sorry, get back to your mind-blowing deep question.
No problem. There is, I mean, I think there is some natural context here. You know, we all have we have this, we are males, we are females. If you look at the natural world, I mean, what are males, you know, we have one goal, and that is procreating. Or defending. Males are very adversarial. I think at some point it is at our core, being a male. But, I mean, I think we don't value, I think we're learning to, but some, as this article mentioned, some of the female qualities, you know. And it's not just teaching, but it's actually valuing them from early on. And, you know, I used to go to the park with my little one, and a boy would fall, and the father would say, "Don't you cry like a girl." You know, like there's something wrong with being sensitive in that way. And, you know, it sets it up as boy strong, girl weak. So I think boys are stacked against them. And again, it gets back to my creating a nurturing and loving environment.
I knew it was going to come
actually,
back here.
Well, I'm trying to tie all of our sessions in since we don't have to okay. tie it into grammar, and you didn't like the grammar of the thing or the margins. But, I mean, I think it gets to that. I think, you know, I think we're going to have to find ways of valuing these female qualities that for a long time in our society have not been valued. And when you look at the very feminine Canadian society, maybe we do have some lessons to learn from our northern colony.
Sure. I would agree. I give you a lot of guff about this. I'd rather say something else, but I don't want to have to go back in and bleep myself. I give you a lot of guff about your focus on love and all of that stuff. But I completely agree that we need to start valuing the contributions of everybody that comes into the class and not trying to fit the kids into the mold that we want to create for them, but allow them to build their own mold and create themselves to a certain extent. There's lots of interesting things about this article. But, you know, as an instructional technology person, I was looking for things about how would this work with instructional technology. And I like the fact that they speak specifically about Facebook and instant messaging and those kinds of things, and being able to recognize what those tools bring to the group dynamic. But it's the same thing for looking at what genders bring to the group dynamic as well. We just need to recognize those things as potentials and allow them to happen if they do, rather than just knock them down. If they're a positive force towards the group dynamic or towards the learning of the student, then as teachers, we should be able to foster those things. That's the key for me, at least.
Yeah. And this is the kind of research that begins to really underscore a lot of the social trends that you see in the workplace and in the school. I mean, people talk a lot about diversity in the workplace. Well, this research proves why diversity is good. We all agree in the principle of equality of men and women. Well, this proves why.
Hey,
women
speak for yourself.
This proves why women need a larger role in group dynamics, because they make it richer. And the world, as dominated by a male voice, or in this article, an assertive, intelligent, go-it-alone voice, which is a core American value, but that's not going to get you very far. It will get you some ways, but not as far as
building a smarter collective. It's like the Borg almost, you know. And it was interesting enough, if you've watched Star Trek, the head of the Borg is a woman. I thought that was brilliant. You know, she's kind of taken over the collective.
Yeah, and she was the only one who had an individualistic side too.
True. Isn't that amazing, the ability Absolutely. Of a woman to actually take control of us and have her own individuality?
Yeah, fictionally, in a 24th century or whatever. It's okay.
Maybe it takes us that long to get there. So are we going to have some time to spitball? We really haven't focused on the spitball. I want to see what you guys got. Now, I know Simon is meek and timid.
Should I let Simon?
I thought it was because of the cold. But
should we allow Simon to go first?
Oh, God, that would be...
This,
yeah. Fun and
fun and condescending at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Patrick made this point earlier, but I got to build off it. This was a horrible read.
Are you building off of his earlier spitball? That's really
I'm just saying
weak.
He preempted me, but I was saving this for last. He came out with this early.
As an American, I don't
keep out swinging. You can bring in a scholarly article, Daniel. And if you want to bring in a newspaper article reviewing a scholarly article, that's okay. But you can't
bring exactly what it was a newspaper article.
Of newspaper summaries of articles. This was like Fisher Price does academia.
I completely agree. I mean, this almost looked like you'd copied and pasted it wrong into your email.
I had to get it done.
The way through, and they start quoting somebody named Tiffany Paulson, a lawyer from Saskatoon. Why do I want to know what Tiffany's opinion is on this group research article?
Because she's a woman.
You cut this from a local paper in Saskatoon, and they asked a lawyer named Tiffany what her opinion is?
Well, I mean, I will have to get a little bit of fear. I mean, come on, you guys are ODU PhDs. I don't really know how much technical research writing I can dig out that you're going to get and be able to handle in one setting.
Oh,
forgive
that
me.
Is such BS, man. Seriously.
Forgive me for trying to dumb it down.
We know
down.
How many people showed up to your defense at your UVA PhD. So
I had to defend twice, my dear friend.
Regardless. I'm sorry to interrupt your little peeing contest between the two of you, but seriously, Danny, you cannot look
Daniel,
at this.
Professional name, please.
No, after you have put this together and sent this article to us, you are a homeless guy named Danny. Okay.
we had a very rich discussion from it.
I swear to you, you need to.
At least I pulled an article and not a YouTube video.
Here. Here's what I will promise anybody.
Freaking video! I can't even read.
involved in this. That's true.
Here's something that I would promise anybody: if you are following us and you hear us, send me your email address. I will send you the article as Daniel sent it to us. So you can see what we are talking about.
You can come on the show next week and give your opinion.
Yes, I promise you.
Spitballs end on the article today.
You send me an email, I'll send it. But actually, I have another issue that I would like to spitball.
Are we at 30 minutes already? Good gracious.
We're just about 30, but we've never...
Are you allowed to spit two spitballs? I mean, you're going to get a detention.
Oh, yes. I've got a big straw back here, and I'm going to spitball as much as I want. So, Simon, did you have anything else you wanted to spitball about?
No, that was... The content was great. It was just the format.
Yeah, the content was good. The other thing that I'd like to spitball about is I thought that the researchers were trying too hard to look for ways to generalize from this, and I didn't get the sense that it was at that stage where you could feel comfortable professionally. Like if I'd conducted this research and had 700 people in groups of 2 to 5 or whatever it is and done these tasks, I don't know if I'd feel confident saying, you know,
I agree with that.
You know, the generalizability of this was a little bit off.
I thought that's what you academics did, though.
What, pick this apart or generalize?
Just generalize. Make sweeping generalizations so that you can get your next conference gig in speaking and make 25 a year.
We never
do that. Individual person.
No academic has ever done that.
Oh, okay. I want that in the wrong meeting.
All right, I cracked myself up. All right, well, those are my two spitballs. The general weakness of the writing and the...
But the message was great. The discussion was great. The tying the 2 weeks of conversation in was great.
Yeah. Now, give us 30 minutes, at least.
Yes, I will. Next time, 30 minutes.
Maybe that's why we both thought that it was so poorly written. We couldn't
Have to give you guys more time to internalize the message. I get that. We're kind of maybe I need to reward you for the menial tasks, and then we'll get into the higher level thinking later.
Perhaps. Well, as always, Daniel,
pleasure.
Danny the homeless guy, Simon,
professional name.
Daniel, I will talk to you later.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Good to see you, Simon.
Simon, I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you guys later.
Thank you.